George Zimmerman offers to just plead guilty and pay the fine or whatever. Zoo visitors watch the mating rituals of the ice cream shop staff. And a serious coworker puts on headphones to focus on his sandwich. Happiness is perpetually fleeting, so try to savor the next few minutes before it disappears once again. This is The Onion Week in Review. Following widespread calls for tighter security along the U.S. border, officials announced this week that the Federal Border Patrol has increased its staff by hiring cheap immigrant labor. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Michael J. Fisher told reporters the agency has been significantly bolstered by new officers from the likes of Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico who work for more affordable, cut-rate wages.
Employing immigrant workers is the only cost-effective way to secure all 2,000 miles of the border around the clock. By paying patrol agents $4 an hour under the table, we can ensure that no one enters the country illegally while also staying comfortably within our budget.
Aiming to serve a wider range of customers, Red Roof Inn officially unveiled its brand new suicidal suite designed to accommodate guests looking for a convenient and affordable way to end their lives. Representatives from the national hotel chain gave The Onion an exclusive tour of the new rooms and their numerous suicide-friendly amenities.
We have a noose hanging from the ceiling, that's standard in all of our rooms, a collection of sharp knives conveniently spread out just on your bed, and a pen and paper for composing final thoughts for loved ones. We've got a small set of razor blades in every bathroom. We also have a variety of prescription pill medications, and we always keep a high voltage toaster by the bathtub in case any of our guests should prefer electrocution.
FBI officials announced they just can't bring themselves to bust a man who recently downloaded every season of the 1990s television show Picket Fences from a BitTorrent website. While stressing that pirating copyrighted material is strictly illegal, federal authorities expressed their sympathy for the man and claimed that perhaps the story of Sheriff Jimmy Brock and the strange events in a small Wisconsin town is all he has left to cling to.
We have more than enough evidence to bust him for piracy, but if the poor guy really wants to watch all four seasons of a 20-year-old CBS drama that nobody remembers, then he's clearly going through a pretty big rough patch right now. And frankly, we don't need to make it any worse.
And in sports news, Aaron Hernandez is really enjoying his time in prison catching up with his former Gators teammates. In other news, characters on True Blood openly talk about how they can't wait for the show's episode to end. The CEO of Jay-Z resigns after the company's stock prices plunge, and a local man loses total control of his face when thinking. For statistical purposes, we have seized all private data from your personal computer, and we are disgusted with your recent internet search history.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
The world of medicine continually adds new phrases to our everyday language. The newest, happy pills, a phrase that covers the range of new tranquilizing drugs designed to ease the problems of the mental illness and strain. This year, 35 million prescriptions for tranquilizers will be filled. Now, while success has been reported in several phases of their use, warning signs were posted this week by the American Psychiatric Association. Well, gentlemen, with millions of Americans taking daily doses of these so-called tranquilizing drugs, do you feel there's any danger to people doing that? May I start with you, Doctor?
Well, I would first start out by saying that I object to the use of the word tranquilizing, since it does not really accurately reflect the use of the drug and the nature of the drug. Of course, it comes from the idea that these were drugs that had a sedative action, and therefore it rendered the patient into a tranquil state. To answer your question directly, I would say yes, there is a danger in the use of these drugs indiscriminately, without prescription, and without control by their family physician.
Mr. Gorman, how do you feel about it?
Well, I would say this. First of all, I want to join Dr. Denver in saying that the use of the word happy pills is most unfortunate. This is a silly business at best. They are pills which control severe agitation in certain cases, but happiness is an elusive proposition. And just one more thing, Steve, and that is this, that there is danger in the casual use, but I think that has been somewhat exaggerated, and we have overlooked the tremendous revolution they have caused in an attack upon mental illness.
You feel that there has been some value?
I think that it's been enormous, as I've only seen it touring hospitals in the last 11 years, but I have seen a leap of several centuries in the somatic treatment of mental patients through the use of these drugs.
Let me go to Dr. Blanton and ask his opinion.
Well, there are two aspects of it. One is the treatment of mental patients in mental hospitals by these drugs, and these drugs have been able to accomplish a great deal in mental hospitals. They have taken the place of electric shock in many cases.
Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me!
And they've enabled people to go out of the hospital in a much shorter time than before. That, of course, is well recognized. However, I think that the great danger of these drugs is for the average person who's taking them without proper supervision. It keeps them from getting adequate treatment at the time, and these drugs have side effects which are not entirely known at the present time, and which I think may very well give rise to serious problems.
You mentioned without supervision. One must have a prescription to get these drugs, must he not?
Well, yes, people get them. They get one prescription, then they'll drop the doctor, and then they'll have it refilled, and then they'll go away and maybe get 50 of them, and they'll be taking them all by themselves and not coming back to the doctor. Many people I know just take them without very much supervision.
Do you think we should confine our activity then in terms of treatment to the conventional methods?
No, by no means. These drugs will help the person overcome an agitated or unhappy, perturbed state and make them available for other kinds of treatment. You can't help a person who is so upset that you can't talk to them very well, like a person you couldn't help very much when he's in a state of rage.
Mm-hmm.
So these drugs are very helpful as an adjuvant to psychological treatment and other kinds of treatment, too.
Don't tase me!
Mm-hmm. Let me go to Dr. Denver.
I would pick up the theme in this way, that we must really divide the problem into, A, the use of the various pharmacologic compounds for psychiatric illnesses in outpatient treatment, namely in the office, by either the general practitioner, who really is the first psychiatrist the patient sees, and B, the use of these various compounds in the psychiatric hospitals. Now, there's no question, if anyone reviews the literature, the results, or actually tours the hospitals, that these pharmacologic compounds have produced the most extraordinary change that has ever been seen in the psychiatric hospitals. We were
this
able
has
to
been because of the drugs?
Because of the drugs. Now, insulin, coma.
I was a big supporter of the enhanced interrogation techniques.
Electrotherapy.
Don't tase me, bro!
Psychosurgery have been used there hitherto. Hydrotherapy was used in the years gone by.
I was a big supporter of waterboarding.
May I ask this question, Dr. Blanton? I've read of perhaps 20 to 30 million neurotics, so-called, in the United States. That's one estimate that's been given. This is a rather scaring figure. What is a neurotic? How do you define a neurotic? What makes a person neurotic?
Also on the plane crash, KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Now to outrage over an apparent prank involving the deadly plane crash in San Francisco.
Earlier today, a TV station there reported the names of the pilots on board the flight. Those names were wrong, and many say racially insensitive. Tonight, the NTSB is apologizing while blaming a summer intern. With so much said about the pilots on board the Asiana flight that crashed in San Francisco, the Fox station in town was understandably eager to get out their name. That once read aloud were clearly given as a prank.
And the NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed.
Hours later, the National Transportation Safety Board, which is handling the investigation, apologized, saying earlier today in response to an inquiry from a media outlet, a summer intern acted outside the scope of his authority when he erroneously confirmed the names of the flight crew on the aircraft. The NTSB confirmed the fake names. It's not clear how KTVU got them in the first place. But later, it issued an on-air apology.
These names were not accurate despite an NTSB official in Washington confirming them late this morning. We apologize for this error.
Learning that a third girl has died from last week's crash at the San Francisco airport, her family requesting that no details be released about the girl or her injuries. Two 16-year-old Chinese girls were also killed in the crash. More than 180 passengers were hurt. Officials say the passenger jet was going too slow, flying too low when it slammed into the seawall during landing, then skidded across the runway and caught fire. The NTSB interviewed the four pilots from Asiana Airlines. Investigators say it's still too early to tell what caused the crash. We've also learned one of the two 16-year-old girls killed was run over by a fire truck during the rescue response. Investigators say the girl was on the ground covered in foam. It's unclear whether she was alive when the truck hit her. Crews worked overnight and into the morning, moving what remains of the Boeing 777 that crashed Saturday. The airport has brought in 1,000 tons of asphalt to make repairs to the runway.
Drivers, beware.
Criminal investigation is now underway following the derailment disaster in Quebec on the weekend. Two more people are confirmed dead, bringing the total so far to 15. But dozens are still missing. As Catherine Cullen explains, debate is raging over who was ultimately responsible.
People in Lac Megantic are now able to get closer to the site of the disaster. Along with grief, there's growing anger at the company responsible for the train and its chairman.
They're just not sorry at all, or they didn't show any kind of respect or nothing. And the only time that he spoke about coming to town, he said that he's not wearing a bulletproof vest and all the stuff, like we're a bunch of savage.
In fact, the company has expressed its condolences and says representatives are on site. But in interviews yesterday, the chairman seemed to blame a volunteer fire department from a nearby town. Shortly before the crash, the fire department in Nantes says it put out a fire on board the train, which required shutting down the engine, the suggestion being that's what turned off the brakes and caused the train to roll into Lac-Mégantic and crash. The fire department says it left the train with a representative from the Montreal, Maine and Atlantic Railway. But the company chairman says that wasn't good enough, that they should have called an engineer, too. People in Lac-Mégantic seem to disagree.
The train belonged to the company. You should have at least the last word and the responsibility for that.
The Transportation Safety Board is investigating the crash, but won't comment on the dispute or reveal details about the brakes. Meanwhile, the chairman of MAA is speaking out again, this time saying he doesn't blame the fire department. Ed Burkhart acknowledges his company's responsibility.
We blow it on this instance. We blow it big time. This is awful. It's absolutely awful.
In France now, six people have died and several dozen have been injured when a packed passenger train derailed and crashed into a station. The accident happened about 16 miles south of Paris. Witnesses say it was travelling faster than would normally have been expected. The BBC's Hugh Schofield has this report from the crash site.
A commuter town south of Paris, 5:15 in the afternoon. An intercity train leaves its track at high speed and careens across a platform onto another line. The scene at the station at Bretigny, one of appalling devastation. The crashed train was full. For many, it was the start of the summer holiday. And at rush hour, the platform was also crowded.
I felt the coach was coming off the rails. Suitcases fell on top of people. People started screaming and completely panicked.
We were on the platform. We heard a big explosion, saw a lot of smoke, and then everybody was screaming.
A major emergency plan has been activated, with hundreds of rescue workers at the scene and the injured ferried to hospital, some by helicopter. Heavy machinery has been called in to cut into the worst hit of the coaches, which was mangled in the crash, and where it's feared there may be more victims. As the horrifying details emerged, President Hollande cut short his schedule to come and express a nation's solidarity.
Let's think about the victims. Let's think about the families and the injured. Let's thank the emergency services.
It would be the engineer who wanted a bite to eat. Left the monkey sitting on the driver's seat. The monkey plugged, fried the locomotive, jumped the gun and did 90 miles an hour down the mainline run. The big locomotive right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worry.
The focus is on helping victims, but already questions are being asked. How could a train simply jump the tracks? Experts say it's an extremely rare kind of accident. Some have spoken of the train almost bucking as it entered the station before ploughing out of control.
Well, for more, we can now go live to the BBC's Hugh Schofield, who is at the scene. Hugh, what more can you tell us?
Well, all I can say is that the rescue operation, well, the emergency operation does continue. I'm as close as I can get, as the press can get. Obviously, it's all sealed off. It's about 100 metres in that direction where under arc lights, rescue workers, emergency workers are still at the scene, cutting through debris, and we think still looking for victims, because it may well be that in this one carriage, which was the worst hit and which was really terribly beaten up, mangled in the crash, that there are dead and potentially injured, but probably dead still inside. But that the news is coming out slowly. That this is from an hour or so ago. Whether it's moved since then, I don't know. But the operation is very clearly underway. The whole area sealed off, and hundreds of emergency workers around us.
The engineer got the dispatcher on the phone. He told him all about his locomotive was gone. He said, get on the wire switch operator to ride, 'cause the monkey's got the main line sewn up tight. The switch operator got the message in time. Said there's a northbound limit on the same main line. But open up the gate, we gotta let him through the hole, 'cause the monkey's got the locomotive under control. The big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
Go!
I mean, how long could this take? Is there anything in particular that's slowing things down?
Well, I mean, they had to get this heavy machinery in to cut into the worst hit of the carriages. That, as I understand it, has happened. They're there. It's fortunate that this happened not far from Paris, not far from a town called Evry, a big town. It wasn't hard to get the machinery and the various necessary bits of equipment here to cut into this front carriage. And it may well be that it's done now. We just don't know. I mean, all you can say is that very quickly people were at the scene, because it's so near Paris, and because the activation light went on straight away. The plan was put into action. The French are very good at this kind of thing. They were there, and you know what could be done has been done. That's all you can say.
And obviously very early days yet, but what sort of thing do you think the investigators will be looking at when they come to try to work out what on earth caused this?
Well, as you heard me say earlier on, I mean, it is a very unusual kind of accident where a train just simply leaves its tracks like that, suggesting that there was something on the tracks. A point failure, something on the track, something left there deliberately, who knows? There is an interesting line, which may be a completely false idea, that there has been work on the lines because of problems with points just north of Bretigny in the last few weeks. It may have nothing to do with it, but if you look on the blogs, the commuters from here have been talking about the work on the line and so on. It may be completely unconnected, but it'll certainly be one of the things that they're looking at.
Why the big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. That a big locomotive is right on time. Big locomotive coming down the line. Big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. Locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
Stop me if you've seen this picture before.
Yeah.
Your shot of the morning. Well, look at the goats. They're perched in three branches in Morocco in trees.
How much were they drinking?
How did the goats get up there? They live in the desert where it's hard to find food, so they learn how to climb trees to eat the berries.
Yeah.
They could have had a monkey tutor.
Yeah, but if the monkey went up to get the berries, you think he would share it? No, the monkey would eat them.
But how?
The goats steal everything, don't they?
climbing without fingers. This is a huge story. Apparently, the goats are actually very good climbers.
Yeah.
You have to give God generations to give the goats the evolutionary ability to be able to climb trees.
It's called Darwin.
Right.
It may be a new part of the evolution of goats. Is this only in Morocco, or is it happening elsewhere?
I've got pictures online here of people who have sent in pictures of goats in their trees.
Yeah.
Well, people mow lawns with goats, so why not mow trees?
Right.
I mean, look at that tree on the left. It is completely chewed bare. Way to go. Bad.
Yeah. Was that a goat?
That was a goat.
That is a goat in a tree?
That is a goat.
But that's almost like a child's swing set. That is a low tree.
Yeah, but goats
it's a tree!
Taylor Swift even getting involved in our goat debate.
I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me now. Blew me to places I've never been. Now I'm lying on the cold hard ground. Oh, trouble, trouble, trouble. Oh, trouble, trouble, trouble.
Goats are like cats and monkeys.
There you go.
We never knew.
Fox and Friends, third hour, starts just about now.
That, by the way, is a sheep.
Yeah.
To talk about Elliot Spitzer.
But first, happy birthday to Tom Hanks.
Have you seen the front pages of the papers this morning?
Sleazy does it.
Let your mind go wild. Yep. I got this story.
Former governor is running for New York City comptroller.
What is it about New Yorkers and guys like Spitzer and Wiener?
Spitzer-Wiener fiasco.
Really? Are these two the best we can do?
Why don't we just get Marion Barry back and have him run for office too?
Whose infidelities are more forgivable? Spitzer's, which are arguably a crime. Wiener's, which were creepier. Bada bing.
New York tabloids have not had this good of an election season in a long time.
Elliot Spitzer getting badmouthed by his pimp.
I'm mystified by the focus and the attention to that.
The public seems to enjoy the freak show aspect of this, and we're enabling it.
Can you imagine Wiener as mayor and Spitzer as comptroller?
If you win this position, will you ever lie to the public once elected?
No.
Never.
No.
These people said the same thing about Blago. All Blago was doing was trying to give kids health care. Leave them alone.
I will put it this way. Hubris is terminal.
People have forgiveness in their hearts. Whether that forgiveness extends to me...
Not everybody forgives!
There are people qualified to run for office that don't have problems with narcissistic behavior, right?
Don't count Spitzer out.
If he can prove himself as a viable candidate and win, he wins. That's democracy.
Why not speed things up with spam?
Interesting transition.
I know.
Spam, spam, spam. Spam championship. And spam.
Spam man.
Spam.
Spam Thai style meatballs.
Spam musubi. Fried spam. Spam teriyaki. Spam sushi.
Spamkins breakfast muffins. Spam on top. Spam in the middle.
And of course, spam and sprinkled with cinnamon.
Spam for everybody. Right, 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 right. Yay!
Famous hockey mom is back.
I'm flirting now with the possible return to politics. Sarah Palin back in the news. She never leaves the news. How does Senator Sarah Palin sound?
You know.
Did she really?
Did she?
She is considering running next year for U.S. Senate right there in Alaska.
Contentious, of course.
Do you think this time she's going to actually do it?
Well, anytime Sarah Palin talks, you got to kind of pay a little attention, I guess.
I've considered it because people have requested me considering it.
Does she hire a team? Does she start to raise money?
The Democrats will make this argument that they would love the idea of her running.
I'm still waiting to see, you know, what the lineup will be and hoping that there will be some new blood.
Senator Mark Begich holds that seat. It would help Begich polarize the race. But if she were to do this, she'd also have to go through a Republican primary.
I'll drink to that debate.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is somebody who didn't finish her term as governor, so why should we expect anything?
Look who's in the Senate now. Chuck Grassley, Lindsey Graham. For God's sake, that to Chuck Schumer. And Mayor Wiener next. Maybe not a rocket scientist, but she's got what it takes.
We love a comeback.
Potential political comeback.
From a media perspective, we would love for her to run.
If you go to your search engine, both the left and the right are buzzing about it.
Senator Palin.
Run, Sarah, run.
Is Sarah Palin ready to run for another office?
Do you feel any responsibility for continuing to egg her on?
This political speculation.
Does she really want to get back into it? Well, we'll find out.
We love someone who can look at their foibles and laugh at them.
You know what today is?
National Slurpee Day?
Okay, where's the brewski?
Time now for some news that you can't use. Something so incredibly amazing, I'm having a hard time finding the words properly to describe it.
Immigration reform grinding to a halt.
The Republicans on the House side are going to kill it.
They're going to probably let this thing die. Well, it feels dead.
Even though the Senate has already passed a bipartisan bill.
Can I make the case that this doomsdaying about immigration may be a bit overblown?
You think it's 50-50? Do you really think it's 50-50? It doesn't even seem like it. It says it's the House bill or nothing.
There is no House bill yet, I should be really clear.
They will not vote on the Senate bill. Instead, they plan to work on a series of smaller bills, step-by-step approach.
House Republicans want to do this on our terms.
The Senate bill has little chance of ever being, no chance of really being considered here.
If President Obama can sign it, we won't support it.
Give one shot for America. Do it for America.
I don't believe we're going to see immigration reform this year.
So I feel very good about where we are, and I think our members are ready to tackle this issue.
It looks like it's in trouble in the House.
Oh, you think?
I know.
You think?
Yeah,
you got your finger on the pulse there.
How do you stop this?
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
That's how we stop it, Brian.
I'm sorry.
Brian's about to be handcuffed and taken off to jail.
You like being on TV?
Yes.
Look at the tweet by Congressman Tim Huelscamp. Most House Republicans agree with most Senate Republicans and Americans. Trusting Obama with border security is like trusting Bill Clinton with your daughter.
Please be seated. Members of the jury, have you reached a verdict? If you'll please fold the verdict form and hand it to Deputy Jarvis. Thank you. Okay, if you'll please publish the verdict.
In the Circuit Court of the 18th Judicial Circuit in and for Seminole County, Florida, State of Florida versus George Zimmerman, verdict. We, the jury, find George Zimmerman not guilty. So say we all, foreperson.
H.G. Wells said, history is a race between education and catastrophe. Well, never more so than today, because the world is set on a course of catastrophe. The emotional constipation and rigidity of the past 1,000 years that has set us up as territorial apes with thermonuclear arsenals, all of that is just set to, go critical. Nevertheless, you know, we are minded creatures in the presence of an evolving and rapidly shifting landscape of problems. And I think that it's a very hopeful sign to look around and notice that the only barrier to the solution of our problems are intellectual barriers. barriers in our own mind. We have the money, the technology, the mass communications, the scientific expertise, the remote sensing telemetry. What we don't have is the will to self-direct all of this technical apparatus toward a rational solution of our problems. But that means that the solution to our problems lies almost entirely in the human domain. And the human domain is the area where we observe the highest rate of unpredictable perturbation. So I don't see the situation as terminal or desperate at all. This is what it's like when a species prepares to depart for the stars. It is chaotic, but it is not disordered. It is more like a birth than anything else. I mean, there is rending of tissue, there is a sense of crisis, of unstoppable forward motion, but it turns out all according to plan, all to good end. The trick is to somehow attain this vision of the ordered correctness of what is happening when it seems so chaotic, and then to template it, to strengthen it each for ourselves, and then to replicate it and communicate it as a meme, because there is no percentage in paralysis here at the brink. The only possibility is of some kind of forward escape. You know, a forward escape is when you attain the goal by simply rushing through the gauntlet. And I think that this history that is a race between education and catastrophe is going to turn out to be a forward escape.
If you awaken from this illusion, and you understand that black implies white, self implies other, life implies death, or shall I say, death implies life, you can feel yourself not as a stranger in the world, not as something here on probation, not as something that has arrived here by fluke, but you can begin to feel your own existence as absolutely fundamental. I'm not trying to sell you on this idea in the sense of converting you to it. I want you to play with it. I want you to think of its possibilities. I'm not trying to prove it. I'm just putting it forward as a possibility of life to think about. So then, let's suppose that you were able every night to dream any dream you wanted to dream. And that you could, for example, have the power within one night to dream 75 years of time, or any length of time you wanted to have. And you would naturally, as you began on this adventure of dreams, you would fulfill all your wishes. You would have every kind of pleasure you could conceive. And after several nights of 75 years of total pleasure each, you would say, well, that was pretty great. But now let's have a surprise. Let's have a dream which isn't under control. Well, something is going to happen to me that I don't know what it's going to be. And you would dig that and come out of that and say, wow, that was a close shave, wasn't it? Then you would get more and more adventurous, and you would make further and further out gambles as to what you would dream. And finally, you would dream where you are now. You would dream the dream of living the life that you are actually living today. That would be within the infinite multiplicity of choices you would have, of playing that you weren't God. Because the whole nature of the Godhead, according to this idea, is to play that he's not. So in this idea then, everybody is fundamentally the ultimate reality. Not God in a politically kingly sense, but God in the sense of being the self, the deep down basic whatever there is. And you're all that, only you're pretending you're not.
I was at the airport. There was this kid, 4 or 5 years old, walking with his mom. He fixed his fingers in a fake gun and then took a shot at me. Now I'm looking at the wall to see if there's something on the wall he could have been shooting at, because I'm in denial. I look back at him. He looks me in my eyes and takes 2 more shots. Now I'm hit 3 times. That was an act of aggression. I have to defend myself. I'm a man before anything. I will point blank fake shoot this kid right here. And it's, hey, die, bitch, little kid, die. What now? Now what? What are you looking at, mom? Control your kids and shit like this won't happen in the airport. Now everybody's getting fake shot. What's everybody else looking at? This got nothing to do with you. American Airlines lady, get down right now. I shoot up you and your bankrupt ass company. My other airport nemesis is airport security. I don't like them at all. They seem so dedicated to keeping bottled water out of the sky. That's their main thing. It's probably easier to get cocaine on the plane than a bottle of water. Probably the only way you couldn't get cocaine on the plane if they looked at it and said, what is this, powdered water? No, it's cocaine. Go right ahead. Enjoy your flight. Because a terrorist tried a liquid bomb thing. Now, nobody could bring liquids on a plane. One person messed it up for everybody. But I feel like that's being reactive instead of proactive, because terrorists are always trying new stuff. So next time it's gonna be some type of Snickers bomb. And after that happens, you can't bring full-size Snickers on a plane anymore. You can only bring miniature Snickers, because one person messed it up for everybody. Now you have security trying to negotiate your Snickers situation. Hey, is it all right if I bring 4 miniature Snickers? That's about the same size as a full-size Snickers security. Don't play with me. This is not a game. We are saving the world one Snickers bar at a time for your freedom in America. Relax, man. I'm just hungry. Stop yelling at me. You can't bring the bottled water, sir. Why not? It's not bomb water. What if I sip the water to show you that it's not bomb water? Well, what if it's sippable bomb water? That's no such thing as sippable bomb water. You're being silly right now, man. That's no such thing as bomb water. One day they stopped me for additional screening, but the only screening they did, they rubbed a cloth on my hands, and then they went and tested. They came back and said, all right, you're good. Okay, cool. Good thing I didn't have bomb juice on my hands. Was that the bomb juice test? What if I did have bomb juice on my hands? What if one of my friends, hey, Hannibal, before you go to the airport, you want to hold a bomb real quick? And I said, you know what? I never held a bomb before. I'm open to new experience. Let me... That's pretty cool. Thanks, man. That's real cool. Then I get to the airport, they test my hands, they say, you have bomb juice on your hands. Is there anything you'd like to tell us? Yeah, one of my friends, he got a bunch of bombs, and he said, you want to hold a bomb real quick before you go to the airport? And I never held a bomb before, so I thought it'd be something cool to do. I made sure not to bring the bomb with me, because I know y'all hate that. So I want to just hold a bomb real quick. I think you need to chill out and stop being jealous, because I got all types of friends. Some of my friends own bombs and let me hold them. You need to open up your social circle and meet some new people. I hate when they try to make conversation with me. Are you going to New York for business or pleasure? I'm going to New York to talk about you in front of strangers. So I guess both, huh? I don't want my glasses in my driver's license photo, so one guy goes, can you take your glasses off? Yeah, sure, Captain America, it's still me. Who are you catching like that? Are you seriously finding terrorists that only use glasses as a disguise? And you, the TSA agent, are cracking those cases, can you take your glasses off? Damn it, no, how'd they find me? 15 years, this disguise was foolproof. I like the simplicity of it. I think I needed a fake nose and mustache to go with it. Ah! Yeah, dude, it's still me, man. You want me to put the shirt on that I had on my license photo also? It's from 8 years ago. I don't have that shirt anymore. One time, I went to the DMV. The woman working at the DMV said, oh, wow, you don't turn 29 until your birthday. So wait, do I kill myself or do you kill yourself? Because we both can't be on this world together. One of us has to go. I'm willing to make the sacrifice just to not be in a place where you are. If this was olden times, you'd be tied to a cinder block and thrown in the ocean because your stupidity would endanger the rest of the population. When I watch porn, I put my hoodie on so I feel creepier. Yeah. Sometimes I get under the computer so it feels like I'm spying on them. Like, yeah. Everybody needs a masturbation hoodie, in my opinion. It's necessary. You have to keep your top warm because your bottom is exposed. Life is all about balance. Pulled the power move on my landlord. I wrote my rent check for 1 cent less than what my rent is. We had a stare down. Yeah, it's 1 cent less. Now what? What now? Front door's messed up. You need to fix that. Living room light is all weird. You need to fix all that stuff before I got the other tenants for next month's one penny movement. You stand to lose 2 to 8 cents depending on participation levels. Jones keep trying to get me to download a new version. I got a new version a couple days ago. I'm fine with this version. It plays music. Rapper Young Jeezy, he has a song where he says, "How stupid, dumb, big, my room's got rooms." Nah, Jeezy, those are closets. Those aren't extra rooms in your rooms. Jeezy, he be the worst real estate agent ever. Right here we have a 34-bedroom house. Let me show you around the property. Great feature this place. Some of the rooms have extra smaller rooms in them. You have to sleep in these rooms like this. Very unique sleeping situation inspired by the Japanese. Let me show you to the bathroom. The bathroom is great. You have a regular size tub, then you have a miniature tub to sink. I got a speeding ticket in Indiana going 80 and a 60. The officer stopped me and said, "Why were you going so fast?" "Because this car is awesome." "That's why I was going so fast. You should be happy I was only doing 80. This car has 160 on the dash. You should be applauding my restraint right now. I was only doing half. Why was I going so fast? Because life is short and we all gonna die soon. And I want to minimize the time I spend on Indiana State Road 37. This state and this road sucks. And officer, if you saw it get speeded, then why'd you speed to catch up to me? You're a hypocrite. If you're really against speeding, you would have kept going to speed limit, watched me speed in the other lane, and then just shook your head and judged me. Instead, we both were speeding for a moment there, and the road wasn't any better for it. How you gonna say that I can't do what I did when you did the exact same thing that I did just to catch up to me to say, don't do that? Thank you. Well, that was conceptually adventurous.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Being fruitful and multiplying is about more than a woman's ability to obtain, hold down, and sustain life. This is about her generously planting seeds in minds, incubating them for 3 minutes of your time, and letting the mic go. Knowing God will help them grow, and every time you speak His truth, you will become fruitful. Multiplying His word, amplifying what's read, walking in what you heard, all the while planting seeds along the way. You see, anybody can make a baby these days, but can you evoke a thought in your listeners that will have them leaning sideways because they want to become your fertile ground? They want to catch your every verb and noun and use your flow to cause each seed to grow, making the manure that is pumped inside your mind by the media useful. Can you stand in front of children and speak in a level underneath speech because they respond to other stimuli, like if your words and your heart meet and reflect what the other has projected? We need to make sure the minds and hearts of our children are protected, nurturing more than just the wombs of newborns who are expected, making the spoken word tradition once again respected because God gave it to us, and its power He perfected. In Genesis 1:28, when He told Adam to be fruitful and multiply, His words weren't rejected. He spoke to nothing and the world was erected. If you speak of nothing, then the world is neglected, infected with brainwashed dummies, well-preserved mentally dead mummies who are so wrapped up in themselves, they're okay with never being able to speak words that produce life, who are all right with never having to think twice because once was hard enough. About our children who are growing up claiming to be tough, speaking violence into existence and having their own words called their bluff, not realizing they just committed verbal suicide. We need to be fruitful and multiply in Baltimore City because the powers that be are unleashing an educational genocide, causing our young people to become dead children walking. This is what we need to do. We need to stand up, actively listen, and be cognizant of how we are talking. Tread lightly when we are walking because the fruits of a mother's labor are constantly watching and listening. You can see their eyes glistening. And if you look closely, you can see their minds processing every little thing you do, multiplying every action and becoming every negative epithet you spew. I wrote this for the youth so that they will know the truth. I wrote this for you to give of yourself because this is an emergency. I wrote this with a sense of urgency, like I've only got 9.5 more years to write because I was only given 33.5 years of life, so I'm preparing for my crucifixion right here tonight through self-sacrifice. And I'm engineering my resurrection from death's yoke with each pen stroke and every word I've spoke. I wrote this because when we are being fruitful and multiplying, speaking life to children dying, we're giving them a little bit of what they need most. And if you're wondering what that is, it's hope.
Now, go find the others. .com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.